All right, members, we're going to get started. We have a relatively simple agenda today. Bless you, Representative Greiley. Last week, I think it was Representative Wormall last week who was doing the seizing.
He caught it.
Is that what happened?
I did.
And Representative Wormall, I want you to keep a close eye on Representative Heigerk, and he came to Mary Murphy's committee looking for a fight, and nobody would take him up on it. It might get fiery yet today here this morning. Members, we've got one, two, three, four bills that we want to hear today. Three of those are intended to be moved on to Representative Slawick's Committee on Early Childhood. And the Gardner bill, I believe, is meant to go to the floor. We still want to wrap up a couple of the reports. These are very simple oral or verbal, not quite sure what it is, oral reports. Of some of the work that's been going on in the interim. Representative Welty, I'm going to put you on the spot in a few seconds, and Representative Greiley, to talk just a little bit about what that's entailed and whether or not you anticipate some legislation coming forward. And do we have a quorum yet? Okay. Well, then, wake up, Representative. Representative Welty, I'm going to put you on the spot. You've been working a little bit in the science teacher licensure exam issue. It's been a little bit controversial, and you and I think Representative Greiling, and I forget the other member that was Representative Erdahl, have been diligently and kind of energetically working on this for the past month or so. So perhaps you can just give us an update on what the issue is and what you anticipate us perhaps dealing with in the next few weeks.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Mariani. And members, I'll just give you a really brief update because I'm currently in the process. I just received the first bill draft yesterday, and there's still a lot of work to do. Been through a couple of revisions of a plan, and now we put that plan into an actual bill form, and hopefully by deadline time, I'll actually have the jacket that will be introduced, and we'll be able to come together with a compromise, and hopefully it will be a compromise. So what the issue is when we take a look at the science licensure, if you could think about, for those of you who are educators, how you get licensed. In social studies, for instance, if I receive my secondary social studies education degree, I can teach history, geography, political science, and a number of the other social sciences just with that one licensure. Whereas in science, if you get a science licensure, you are getting a licensure that's specific to biology or specific to chemistry. And so what science teachers have to do is they have to go through a process in order to get licensed in one of those other areas. And so they have to get multiple licensures in order to teach all of the sciences. Mm-hmm. So the issue arose when the Board of Teaching implemented a rule that says that you can get a science licensure, an additional science licensure. So let's say you're licensed in chemistry, but you want to get a license in biology. You could get a license in biology by taking an exam. And what we currently have in rule is that you could go through a portfolio process, you can go through a university program that's been accredited or that's been accepted by the Board of Teaching as the proper program to go through to get your licensure. But now they've implemented that you could just take the practice too and you could get your licensure. So that's when the red flags came up. Many in the science teaching profession already said maybe that does not truly show whether or not this teacher is prepared to teach that subject matter. And so they wanted something that a little bit more rigorous than an exam. So we've pulled in both sides. Representative Greiling and Representative Erdahl were in the discussions. We met individually with the members who were opposed to this new rule. We met with those who were in favor of this new rule. And now we're hoping to bring forward that compromise solution and put it in bill form and resolve the issue. So that's the update at this point, and I hope to have the legislation by deadline.
Terrific. Thank you, Representative Welty. I appreciate your willingness to step forward and help lead this discussion over the last few weeks, and we do look forward to your legislation. My only advice is to get it in quick. Things obviously are moving pretty quickly here, but please work with Christina and make sure that we have that calendars up in the next few weeks' schedule. So, thank you. Any questions for Representative Welty? All right, thank you. Well, sure. Representative Gleiling is going to share with us quickly the terrific work that the K-12 finance folks have been working on, and we'd like to hear a little bit about the task force, legislative task force that was authorized this last session to look at our financing of K-12 education. Representative Gleiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity, since we have different members on our committee, to get everybody somewhat apprised of what's been going on in the interim. And I'll just say, Representative Welty was very modest, I think, in his report, because he had two groups with tigers by the tail, and has done a masterful job of mediating and, I think, coming up with something that those of us on all sides of that issue will be able to support. So I thank him for that. It's been fun to watch. I will report on four task forces that K-12 Finance has, and the first one is chaired by Representative Willie Dominguez, and it's charged with updating the DSEG rule. Representative Hyde Durkin and I serve on that one. Is there anybody else that's here that serves on it? Representative Hyde Durkin? I'm trying to think. Okay. It's Representative... Oh, yeah. Representative Mariani, of course. Forget because you're on everything, so we don't count you, I guess. anyway, we are charged to look at the legislative auditor's report and come up with legislation. And Representative Dominguez has a bill drafted already that I know will be heard at length in this committee, so I won't go into it. But he does take most of the good recommendations from the auditor, and I think we should seriously consider them. It's a finance thing because right now the DSEG rule costs us $62 million, and in order to update the financing formula as the auditor recommends so it's fair to more districts, it costs another $30 million. So that part of it, unfortunately, will probably have to wait to a better day, but at least you can look at the policy, clarifying what that money is really intended to be for. Secondly, if Representative Dietrich were here, she could report on this one because she chaired two subcommittees over the interim, and the one that she did for K-12 was on the permanent school trust lands. And PS Minnesota came forward and asked for many changes in the finance formula. One of them was to have a stable source of funding for technology. As you know, we put in one-time money last year for things that districts could do on a one-time basis. But really, when we're charged with looking at equitable funding across the state, we do have to look at technology because some districts need the distance learning and so forth more than others. And all students should have the opportunity to be dealing with current technology. So she's recommending that the permanent school trust land proceeds, which right now is $23 million, be dedicated to technology. I know Representative Garofalo served on that committee. Is there anyone else here on this committee that served on that one? I know they actually went up and toured some things with Representative Rukavina and so forth. They have a couple other bills that they will have on that topic as well.
Mr. Gleiling, Christina Gossick, our CA, tells us that that bill, Representative Dietrich's bill, will be heard here this week on Thursday.
Oh, well, then I won't say any more about that, and Representative Dietrich can talk about it herself.
Thank you for warming us up to it.
Yeah. Thirdly, the Representative House chaired a facilities committee that Representative Benson served on, and Representative Benson, was there anyone else here that was on that one?
No.
Okay. I know Representative Demmer was on it, too. Anyway, they are looking at the portion of school funding that looks at facilities and are charged with looking at, you know, how can we do better by facilities. Just today we saw in the paper the charter school lease levy situation with funding and the fact that they can deal with their building needs by not going to the voters, whereas regular school districts have to. In the K-12 committee, we looked at the Wells School that can't pass a bond levy for the past 40 years. So how to have a stable source and how to be more equitable in that is what they're charged with doing. And I know one thing we will be looking at is, should all districts get to just plain levy for bonding without having to go to the voters if, you know, they have a plan approved by the department, instead of having the whim of the voters for something like building maintenance or building building adequacy. So we'll have to wrestle with that. And then the final report, Mr. Chair, is the Education Finance Reform Task Force that I co-chair with Senator Terry Bonoff. And on that committee is Representative Jim Dabney, Representative Terry Morrow, Representative Carol McFarland, and Representative Bud Heidgerken. And we met for quite a few hours, wouldn't you say, Representative Heidgerken, in December and early January. And then we left our recommendations with the staff, and they are almost ready to meet with us with the first draft of our bill, along with the very telling district runs of how it turns out. And then we need to make sure that it's equitable. And then that will be our grand plan for how to fund long-term our vision for education. And we're also looking at what is our vision for education and how do we adequately fund it. And then this report will be how to fairly fund the adequate funding that is required. And that will take, and other states that have done it, will take 2 to 3 bienniums to probably fund it. And I just hope after this session is over, we're not too far behind, because that will set us back on that vision. And we really, really need that. Since the state took over, so-called took over education funding, we've been doing nothing but put it on to the property taxpayers, and I think we're setting ourselves up, if we don't do something very soon, for another equity lawsuit, because property taxes are not fair. Some districts can more easily raise money through the voter approval than others, and even those who can don't want to raise the money that way. It's a regressive tax that takes up volunteer time that people would rather be tutoring children and doing things they want to do instead of becoming professional fundraisers. So that one we'll be spending a lot of time with in the Education Finance Committee, but I appreciate the opportunity on all of these to have a chance to report in, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greiland. Your committee has been very busy in the interim, as has ours, and I really appreciate the collegial working relationship between the two committees. And I have to say, it's Representative Greiland, it's a privilege, truly privilege, and an awful lot of fun working with you.
You know, I feel the same.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Would you be so kind as to move the minutes of the
Today's the 19th.
February 14th.
Mr. Chair, I do move those minutes. I did even read them.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. The minutes of February 14th have been moved. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Well, I'm sorry. Representative Demmer, I think you had a... Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you. I have a question actually for Representative Greiling. You mentioned about the property taxes, and I know we've had some trending of insufficient property taxes. There have been reports and information about where we stand nationwide, state tax dollars paying for education versus property tax. Do you know where we are ranking-wise in the nation? I know we've been pretty high in the past, but I don't know if there's been any change in that. Do you know what that is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I would not want to be quoted on that without checking with our fiscal staff. But I know that when you take into account, if you're talking about the portion of school funding that is local property taxes, I will check on that and get back to you. I don't want to be quoted.
That
remembering facts and figures, unlike Representative Wardlow, is not my strong suit.
If we could get that information, Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate that. I don't know where we stand on that.
Representative Greiling, you've heard the request for information, and perhaps we could facilitate getting that to Representative Demmer. Very good. Members, our first bill today is House File 2983, Representative Peterson, and Representative Peterson has a guest presenter here, so we want to make sure we get through this bill before he needs to scoot to an appointment, I believe, yet this morning. And so, Representative Peterson, move House File 2983 be recommended to pass and refer to the Finance Committee. To the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the Committee on Early Childhood Education Finance. I believe is the name. Representative Wallace Committee. And Representative Peterson, you have, I believe, a delete all amendment.
I do.
Would you care to move that as well at this point?
I would like to move the delete all amendment. I think the end is DEI, and ask that that also be forwarded to the Finance Committee.
Okay. Representative Peterson then moves the delete all amendment DE1. Members, you should have that in your packet, and this basically puts the bill in the shape that you wish to have it before us today. I believe we vote on that. Is that right, Representative Erickson?
Pardon me?
I'm forgetting my procedures. I believe
we
vote. Is it just before us at this point? Okay, good. So it's before us right here. Yeah, everyone's forgetting. A little rust here. So thank you, Representative Erickson, for your help with that. So, Representative Peterson, the bill is before us. I believe the bill is before us. No, we do need to move on. Yeah, we do. So, members, this is your courtesy vote here. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Now the bill is before us, as you prefer it to be, Representative Peterson. We're all yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to be here this morning to introduce one of the top priorities of the Early Childhood Leadership Team, and they recognize that we must continue to build a strong foundation for children starting at birth through the establishment of a quality education continuum of birth to 5 years old. And we're advocating for an office that many other states have already created. In addition, you should have in front of you a document which contains the recommendations of the federal government regarding the Head Start Act, and it recommends that the governor establish a state advisory council on early childhood education and care for children from birth to five. It also recommends there be an individual to coordinate activities of the state advisory council, and so we've taken this and expanded it a bit and created an office that will coordinate all the work of the two departments, the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Education. Now, I'm very pleased to have Art Wolnick here with us today to give us his perspective on this office. He's an economist from the Federal Reserve Bank, and as you many of you know, he's been a tireless advocate for early childhood programs, starting with birth through age five. And I might add that I think he's also a very good friend of education, and we're very pleased to have him here this morning. Thank you.
Mr. Rolnick, welcome to the committee. It's always good to see you. Please state your name for the record,
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're all yours.
I'm Art Rolnick, Director of Research at the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. I also serve on a number of boards, including the Twin Cities United Way. I serve on the council, the Minnesota Council, on Economic Council here. I've been on a number of years. And I serve on a board called Ready for K, which is an advocacy group for early childhood education. But maybe more important for these hearings, I serve on the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, the MELF board. I've been asked to speak about the importance of this issue. I'm actually here speaking about economic development. You may not think of early childhood development as economic development, but I'm going to argue that it's the best investment you can make. Much more important, even though currently we're very concerned about the Northwest Airlines Delta merger, we're very concerned about this economy as it slows down. Many of you may be, like my father-in-law, are interested in which way interest rates are going to go by the Federal Reserve. But I'm going to argue, if you take a big picture, long run perspective, you can't find a better investment than making sure that every one of our children are ready for school. Currently, we estimate that 50% of the kids in Minnesota aren't fully prepared for kindergarten. Research, and I'm citing research by James Heckman from the University of Chicago, shows that if kids start behind school on average, and I want to stress on average, they're the kids that stay behind, they don't catch up, they drop out, the costs to society are extraordinary. We can do better, we know that. We know if we start actually prenatal to five, we can make a huge difference in the lives of these kids and their contributions to society. The cost-benefit analysis there is overwhelming in favor of these kind of investments. The research that we did that has gotten international attention, not just national attention, showed that there's a 16% inflation-adjusted rate of return by doing high-quality early childhood education. So this national movement has created an awful lot of interest. It's getting into the presidential debates. Many states, as mentioned earlier, are moving in this direction by creating offices for early childhood education. I think this would be a watershed for the state of Minnesota. And I should point out, you've got the business community behind you. I mentioned the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation. That board, the board that I'm involved with, it includes Brad Anderson, the CEO of Best Buy, Doug Baker, the CEO of Ecolab, Mark Banks, the CEO of Blue Cross Blue Shield, Robert Brunix, the president of the University of Minnesota, Lauren Siegel, the president of United Way, Gene Taylor from the Taylor Corporation, Charlie Weaver, executive director for Minnesota Business Partnership, etc. The business community clearly understands the critical nature of making sure every kid starts school, that every kid is successful for the economic success of this community. We've raised $15 million on our way to $30 million privately to fund high-quality early ed to help you decide what works best. One of our pilots that's getting national and international attention is a pilot in St. Paul that starts moms prenatal with public health nurses and provide scholarships for at-risk kids to go to high-quality programs. These are the type of things that MELPA is going to bring to the table, but it's critical for the state to take a role here, and I think this is a step in that direction, ultimately to make sure that every child in the state has an opportunity to start school ready and succeed. I applaud the effort to create this office, and I think it's a move in the right direction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lomas. We appreciate your advice and your endorsement of this concept. Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, since Arthur Romek has to leave to go to a meeting by 9 o'clock, if there are any questions from any of our members here, I would ask that they do that now so he can leave.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Are there any questions or thoughts for Representative Romek, for Mr. Romek, Representative Harrison?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Romek, when you use the pronoun we, to whom are you referring?
Mr. Romek.
You kept saying we. You mean the government? Or do you mean something other than that?
When I speak of research, there's a general agreement now amongst neuroscientists and the sociologists and the economists that we find extraordinary returns for investing in high-quality early education starting prenatal. When I use the term we, I mean as a society, I'm talking about the returns to public investment. As you may know, I've been very critical of using public money to support private companies, whether it's a Target store downtown or a headquarters that Best Buy has or new stadiums. The public return there is zero. So the we that I'm using is we as a society, we can do much better. We are way under investing in early childhood education. And so the research I'm referring to is pretty well accepted now, and the we that I'm referring to as a government, as a public institution, it's the general we.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Romek, do you think that government can be, you know, government programs can really bring about a change within families who may not have the wherewithal to make sure their children are ready for school?
So, Mr. Chair, the programs that we've been looking at are really much more privately oriented, but have a government component. For example, this is research that was done with Procter & Gamble money in Cincinnati. They provided public health nurses for at-risk moms prenatal. They found infant mortality went down 70%. They found low birth weight babies went down dramatically. Followed up with high-quality early childhood education, we get these high returns. Now, the program that we're looking at in St. Paul is empowering the moms with public health nurses and scholarships to go to high-quality early ed programs. And they can be faith-based, they can be other private programs, they can be public programs. We really care about the bottom line, that these are high-quality programs that make sure these kids are ready for school. So my view of this is more of a partnership, partly government, partly private driven, and I think the MELF is going to try to answer some of those questions as how that should be how that should take place.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rolnick, and again, I appreciate your presence here today and squeezing us in between meetings. Obviously, you bring a passion and a consistent way for us to frame up and focus on this vitally important issue, and I really want to extend my appreciation to you for your leadership in our state and walking with both the public and the private sector to wrap their hands and their arms around our need to invest more in early childhood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Issues.
Thank you very much.
Representative Peterson?
Okay, we also have Karen Cadigan from the University of Minnesota to share some background information about why we need to move ahead on this important project.
Welcome, Ms. Cadigan.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Karen Cadigan. I'm the Policy Director at the University's Center for Early Education and Development and also the Children, Youth, and Family Consortium. In that role, I do increasing amounts of policy education and sort of cross-pollinating ideas between researchers, practitioners, and policymakers. I've been involved in the discussions about early childhood systems for about the last 5 years and have some background that I'm interested in sharing. Minnesota's government, like that of other states, spends significantly less time and money on early learners compared to K-12 or higher ed learners. This is changing for reasons that we could sort of bicker about, I guess, but the fact of the matter is that it is changing. As that has happened, one of the sort of artifacts of the existing non-system that we have has been increasing amounts of inefficiency, difficulty with accountability, and difficulty agreeing on and measuring results for little kids, which at the end of the day I think is what everyone is interested in. So in Minnesota, this idea for some kind of an office or an agency has come up a number of times over the last couple of years, including at the governor's School Readiness Summit in the summer of 2006. Also in the summer of 2006, there was a group of about 75 private and public early childhood leaders from the state that had a two-day sort of think session, and one of the outcomes of that was to consider some kind of better overarching structure. And most recently, as Representative Peterson alluded to, at the third annual Early Childhood Caucus for Leaders retreat, this was one of the ideas that sort of came up. So just a few, when I was thinking about this issue, we're trying to anticipate questions that you might have, so I just want to run through quickly a couple of the questions. The first would be, what might it look like? In other states, nationally, state offices or departments of early learning range a bit, and their reason for being, some come as a result of system crises, some come as a result of a particular advocate or champion. They vary a bit in how they're established, they vary a bit in their duties, and they even vary a bit in issues covered. Some states have an office that focuses more particularly on child care versus early learning programs, not that those should necessarily be different. So clearly Minnesota would want to do some more sort of specific thinking about how this might work best here in our state. One of the big questions, I think, is that you might say, well, isn't the MELF doing this? Isn't the MELF sort of responsible for overseeing early learning? And the MELF, and I apologize if I'm sharing information that you already know, but I think there's been some confusion about what the purpose of the MELF is. The MELF is essentially an R&D unit for statewide early childhood progress. Their mission is really to discover, over the next 5 years, the most cost-effective ways to get kids from birth to five ready for school, make some recommendations in 2011, 2012, and then go away. They're not a source of stable funding or an ongoing unit. In addition, as you know, the MELF is funded and governed by the private sector. It has no public funding or oversight at the moment. I think another certainly question that comes up in proposing something of this significance is more state-level bureaucracy really helpful? Is that more of just sort of moving around the deck chairs on the Titanic, or will it actually make some kind of a difference? And I would say, in my experience and things that I've been hearing from folks in the community, that it is, and even from folks from the department, so I certainly don't speak for them, but it is very challenging to pay particular attention to the unique needs of birth to five-year-olds and their families in departments that have a much broader focus, much more competition for their time and issues. And that there's potential, what other states have found, is that there's better potential for being more responsive to families, more responsive to cultural diversity, and better connected to community, to local communities, if there's a particular sort of go-to place at the state for early learning. I could say more, but I think I'll stop there. Happy to take questions, and thank you for your time.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ms. Cadigan. And in fact, we will do some questions now. First up is Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I also want to announce that at 4 o'clock we are hearing more about the scholarships in the Early Childhood Committee, and Dr. Rolnick will be back for that. So if you're interested in that, you can come to the 4 o'clock hearing. I think it'll be very interesting. I just want to thank Representative Peterson for bringing this bill forward. This is kind of a tough concept, but it's something that's really needed. Is even as the Early Childhood Committee, we have an awful lot of problems with getting the Education Department to talk to the Human Services Department. So I think that this is a very important bill, and I hope we'll take it seriously. And even if we can't do it this year, Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, I hope it's a vision for the future.
Thank you, Representative Warmoth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I look at this DE1 amendment, it's a lot better than the original bill. Thank you for that. In particular, I was looking at item number 2, work for the Departments of Education, Human Services, and MELF. Whoever's going to do that better be good to get them to work together. I like number 4 where it says encourage family choice, because I think that's got to remain. And number 5, assuring parents a decisive role in planning operations. Because some of the concerns that people like who think like me, not many do, but I'm concerned about large government, more bureaucracy. So is this going to make government big and more unwieldy, or is it going to streamline the process and make for more efficiency? That's what's going on in my brain. If it's more efficient and streamlined and does make early childhood issues work better for the community, that's a good thing. So that's where I'm coming from, and that's some of the issues maybe a lot of others have regarding adding an office. I noticed I was looking at this handout about the federal Head Start bill and the advisory board. This is much smaller than that. I do have a question. Does anybody do this in the Department of Education right now? And how much is it going to cost? And are we going to have a big office with fingers going into the community, touching all the families, forcing them to do things? That's a big worry some people have talked to me about. But on the outset, I'm much more comfortable with this amendment than I am with the original bill. So,
Representative Warlaw raises, very cogent points and questions. I think there are questions that all of us have in our minds. So, Ms. Cadigan, Ruth Peterson, are we simply growing government? Are we talking about a big office here that's going to be terribly intrusive? What's your vision of how this would
Well, Mr. Chair, I think Karen Cadigan already stated some of the goals, and that is to deal with the inefficiencies and to really consolidate, streamline what's happening with Health and Human Services and the Department of Education. And you talk to anybody who's in those departments, and they feel that need for that kind of coordination, communication, and an alignment of standards, alignment of what they're doing, as well as dealing with all the issues that are listed on this particular bill in terms of working with families and reaching out to communities. And in the long run, I think you will find efficiencies that will pay for itself. We're not thinking of a huge office. We're looking here at an executive director who he or she will have to have good skills, both at facilitating and a good background in dealing with all the early childhood issues. So this is up to the governor to appoint that kind of a director and to see that this, all of these things are implemented, and then to report back to us on a yearly basis and make recommendations for what we should be doing. As to the fiscal note, we don't have that yet. We will get that before we get into the Finance Committee, but we haven't figured that out yet.
Representative Dudwall. That's out. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment first from an earlier discussion. My memory of the history of public education is that beginning of the last century, a decision was made that for the benefit of our economic and political and social system, that a free public education for all children should be provided by the state. And a decision was made, which was very controversial at that time, that that there ought to be mandatory attendance laws. My understanding that in this proposal, early childhood opportunities are voluntary on the part of parents. Is that correct?
Yes.
No, for some kids.
All right. So do you feel that would allay the concern some have that this is a further intrusion on the part of the federal government into parental decision making as to the benefits of these types of programs for their children?
Representative Peterson, quickly.
Mr. Chair, very quickly. I think this kind of bill will allay because it is voluntary. It always is voluntary. And quite frankly, when you look at the number of parents where we have both of the parents working, the reality is that these children are in either a family, friends, and neighbor kind of situation, in a child care situation during the day, or in some type of preschool situation. So we do have the programs, both public and private, in place. And parents have those options to choose. And what we need to do is to try to give them more information, to try to increase the quality of the programs, and then to find some accountability for what we're doing here at the state to coordinate all those activities. This is a huge system that we have in early childhood, and this piece will try to, I think, will attempt at least to try to get some kind of coordination and communication between the various departments.
Quick follow-up, Representative
Benson. Thank you, real quick. Representative Peterson, could we conclude then that we can be assured the parents are intelligent enough to make this decision for their children, and we do not need to worry about the government interfering in parental decisions of these kinds?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, as far as I know, that's the way it's always been, and that's the way it will be.
Thank you.
And members, it is important that we get these thoughts on the record so that legislative intent is, in fact, clear as we move forward with all pieces. Ms. Cadigan, very quickly.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to comment on, I'm a psychologist by training, about one of the other potential advantages of having particular attention to early learners is that there, I think it would be concerning to all of us if what we ended up doing is having a downward extension of school for little kids, having just smaller desks. But there are particular, very important differences in early learners that have to do with the level of parent involvement, attachment issues, all of these kind of things that ideally I think some kind of an office would have increased flexibility so that it wouldn't look just like the K-12 system, and that it wouldn't pay attention just to the same populations that human services would, that it would be universally accessible but voluntary as well. That's what other states have found. So, thank you.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, just very briefly, I want to thank Representative Peterson and others who changed the bill from the first format, like Representative Wardlaw. I like this one better. And the reason I do is because it seemed to me to just create a whole new office that was yet another kingdom wouldn't work as well as this proposal, where there's an attempt to have somebody answerable to both, and there has to be communication, but it's not just another silo, hopefully.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Finally, Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll echo those same comments. The office is much more palatable than the commission, if you will, sort of thing. As you know, I'm very interested in the challenge also, and just a concern. It's a more rhetorical question, I think, that we've grappled with is, as was alluded to in the bill, that we have this broad range of private home child care providers, licensed, unlicensed, whatever, all the way up to licensed organizations. And we also have county social services involved with the child care providers and that sort of thing. So just as a thought to make sure we know that we're also not just coordinating state offices of health, human services, and education, we also have county services involved with child care providers. And a question begs to be asked, how would this person coordinate in with county people who are out in charge of overseeing child care services and that sort of thing, and how would this interrelate with that as we go education to health human services? Kind of a rhetorical question, but I think one that begs to be answered.
Yeah, Mr. Peterson, care to comment, or Ms. Kettigan?
Well, actually, we haven't talked about the county services at this point, but I would see that at least there has to be some communication with this office, but I would think that would come through Health and Human Services because they're attached in some way. The county services are attached to Health and Human Services, and so I would think that it would come around through that division.
Well,
if I could, Mr. Chair, I agree. I guess my only concern is that there's one more. There should be that communication, and I know we have issues now. It just needs to be thought through because we're offering one more layer of an answer to, if you will, possibly here with the director of something that now as a child care provider now, what's my role with this new office that's being created as I'm offering services for early childhood readiness, if you will, for kindergarten, because some child care providers are doing that, some are not. And it's that age-old question again, and I do see another layer here. I do see another person to answer to, and it has to be very delicate work, and it's the right person, obviously, to do that without creating still another person that I answer to as a child care provider, if that's what I'm doing.
I think it's very good advice that Representative Demmer raises, that in the end, all we're doing is creating just yet another person to answer to. We're not really pursuing the public policy. My staff points out that in sub 8 on line 2.1 and 2.2, there is a directive, an expectation that there be this broad, communications and coordination, collaboration among the different points of entry for these services, including local entities. Members, I'm going to move ahead. We have three other bills before us. And so Representative Peterson renews the motion that House File 2983, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the Early Childhood Education Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative
Peterson. Thank you very
much. And thank you, Ms. Cadigan, for your testimony today. I just want to take a brief second to acknowledge we've got some high school students with us. They're trying to hide. You can barely pick them out among all the other adults here, but I think I know where they're sitting, and I'm wondering if you all can rise and perhaps one of you can tell, or perhaps you can tell us where you're from.
14 high school students here, and they're from all over the state. We have seven from the metro area, seven from Greater Minnesota, and they're serving the community process this morning.
Wonderful. It's good to have you with us today. Next up, Representative Lanning, House File 2185. Welcome, Representative Lanning. I'm wondering, Representative Erickson, if you could move.
Mr. Chair, I will move House File 2185 to be before the committee, and I think it has to be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
That's correct. Representative Erickson moves House File 2185 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Finance Committee. I believe that was a further recommendation that it be forwarded to the Early Childhood Education Finance Committee. Representative Lanning, morning. Welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning.
I would like to ask that you take the DE-1 amendments and put, in order to put the bill in the shape that we would like it to be.
Mr. Kerr, I will move the DE-1 amendment.
Senator Erickson moves the DE-1 amendment to House File 2185. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Prevail. The bill is before us, as you wish it, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I might ask also two small oral amendments.
Okay.
Sure. When we had the bill before the committee last year, we were talking about 2 years of funding, and because we're talking only now 1 year of funding, on line 15, delete the word 10 and put in at least 5. And on line 19, delete the word 8 and put in its place at least 4.
Mr. Chair, I'll move those two oral amendments on lines 15 and 19.
Thank you. Representative Erickson moves oral amendments on line 15 to replace the word 10 with at least 5, and on line 19 to replace the word A with the words at least 4. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Lanny.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. The Search Institute of Minneapolis has done national research. And what the Search Institute has done is they've identified 40 developmental assets that young people need to have in order to grow up healthy. And what their research has found is that the more of these assets that individual children have, the less likely they are to engage in at-risk behavior. And that research has been very powerful to our community. Moorhead was the second community in Minnesota to adopt the Healthy Community Initiative. There are now about 25 communities in the state that offer multifaceted approaches to this initiative. We did, with the help of the Search Institute, we did research on our young people. And we found that some of these assets were really lacking. And so as a community, we went to work to try and build those assets so that we could improve the situation for our young people. And one of the things that we found as a result of this work is that we were able to reduce juvenile crime in our community by a very significant rate. And this initiative, we believe, was one of the reasons why we were able to do that. In all my years of public service, I have never seen an initiative capture the imagination and support of a community more than this one. We've been doing this now since the mid-1990s. It's going strong, been very successful, and we want to find ways to further enhance this initiative in our community. What this bill does is it directs the Education Department, and we have been in consultation with them going back to last year, directs them to enter into an agreement with the Search Institute to do a couple of things. One, to set up a granting process where now there would be at least 5 additional communities in Minnesota that could be identified and chosen to adopt this kind of initiative on their community level. And then secondly, to also have a process for identifying at least 4 of the 25 or more communities that currently have it to be able to enhance and grow their initiative in the community. The bill requires the Search Institute to do an annual reporting to the Education Department, and Education is told to do an evaluation of this program to make sure that there is that kind of accountability. And the last point I want to make before turning it over to Dr. Peter Benson, who is the President and CEO of Search Institute, Mr. Chair, as you and I have worked on the Poverty Commission, the Commission to End Poverty, it's become more and more clear to me that one of the things that we need to do to serve the needs of children living in poverty are these kinds of initiatives on communities throughout Minnesota. And so for that reason, Mr. Chair, I'm proud to present this bill to you, and I'll ask Dr. Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lanny and Dr. Benson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record give us your testimony.
Thank you. Peter Benson, President and CEO of Search Institute in Minneapolis. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, Representative Lanning, for this opportunity to spend a few minutes helping to make the case for this very important bill. I think most government investment in young people's lives takes the focus of trying to reduce the risks and the threats that interfere with healthy development. We at Search Institute became the national pioneer starting about 18 years ago in framing an additional approach of what the building blocks of healthy development are that communities can be in charge of if communities are mobilized to gift kids with these developmental building blocks. And so we initiated this scientific effort to name the 40 developmental building blocks, developmental assets, that are universally important to all young people in the United States across race, ethnicity, family income, politics, and theology. What's the stuff? What's the universal ingredient that's in the mix for growing healthy and whole human beings? Some of it's about relationships, connection, the sustaining of connection across time with great people. It's about boundary. It's about expectation. It's about service. It's about the formula for healthy development. As many of you know, we have been doing this work on a national level. There are about 600 healthy community, healthy youth initiatives in the United States, but there are some of the most beautiful ones and the longest running ones right here in Minnesota. Representative Lanning spoke with great power about the impact of growing assets on issues like juvenile crime. But for this committee, it is so important for you to recognize the power of building assets on academic achievement. And so a paper that you have before you that we distributed earlier is called Boosting Student Achievement, New Research on the Power of Developmental Assets. And that paper doesn't just report the research we do at Search Institute. It incorporates research being done by school districts and academic institutions across the United States, showing that when you mobilize communities to build developmental assets, great things happen with academic achievement. The best way to build these developmental assets is not just to give it to schools and expect them to do it all themselves, but to actually create a community initiative that unites families, neighborhoods, congregations, employers, and, oh, by the way, schools, in a shared vision of the building blocks of human development that all human beings have a role in generating if we could only figure out how to recreate a shared vision in our towns and cities about what it takes for young people to succeed. This Bill 2185 would provide $250,000 to Search Institute to support and expand the healthy community, healthy youth movement here in Minnesota. These asset-building initiatives, traveling under the banner of Healthy Communities, Healthy Youth, are very intentional community-wide initiatives and coalitions. Yes, including school, but when they're successful, they branch out and incorporate the rest of community. It is always wonderful to hear Representative Lanning's testimony about the city of Moorhead. The Senate author of this legislation, Senator Ron Last in St. Louis Park, testifies to the power of the Healthy Community, Healthy Youth Initiative, 15 years old, in that city of 40,000 people of St. Louis Park. Specifically, Search Institute would use this funding to do the following three things, and I'll just go a little bit deeper than Representative Lanning mentioned. Yes, we would, first of all, help to implement at least five new initiatives in the state of Minnesota. We would do a request for proposal process to solicit proposals from communities in Minnesota who are ready to launch, and we would provide those selected communities with the tools, the training, the resources, the technical assistance they need to really successfully implement a community-wide initiative. There are 25 great multi-sector initiatives now. There's another 60 in Minnesota where the work of asset building has entered a single sector, usually that's schools. Where this really gets powerful is when it expands to multi-sectors and the shared vision is created. The second thing we would do is to bolster the work of a healthy community health initiative in at least four ongoing initiatives in the state of Minnesota. And the third thing we would do is to strengthen the networking and information sharing across these many dozens of community initiatives. Right now, it is so hard to bring leaders from different communities together to talk about how they drive this work into family education and family support, how it's driven into the DNA of schools, how it's driven into the DNA of city government, how these people come together in a local town to share this vision. And so we think an important part of this is also connecting communities to each other in regions of the state in order for peer learning and ongoing support. I should note that a strength-based, asset-based approach to student achievement doesn't require a specific program or a specific curriculum, but instead focuses on infusing a shared vision around connectedness, relationships, belonging. All kids are our kids, infusing that new perspective into the systems and sectors of a city so that people begin to see the shared work of growing healthy and whole human beings. So that when this really starts to work, it's about training bus drivers to be asset champions for kids. It's about training janitors to be asset builders in kids' lives. It's about reopening neighborhoods to know kids. It is about congregations taking advantage of their intergenerational power to be connected to young people. It is about schools becoming relational places who remember that the first job for academic achievement is to fall in love with young people and the spark they bring to the party, and to be very attentive to each and every young person. There are other states that are moving forward with initiatives similar to what we're speaking about here. In the state of New York, there is the ACT movement, Assets Coming Together, which provides support to many communities to build developmental assets and to connect with each other. In the state of Maine, the governor has created a children's cabinet whose primary work is to monitor the developmental assets in dozens of communities in Maine and to help drive the developmental asset approach into community life there. In the state of California, the State Department of Education has mandated that all principals and superintendents spend significant time in training about how to create asset-building schools and how then to connect those schools to the rest of community. These initiatives around the United States are generating tremendous enthusiasm and support, in part because of the link of asset building to risk reduction, but just as importantly, the connection of asset building to academic achievement. Building developmental assets merits consideration as one of the strategies
that those engaged in education must use in order to ensure that all young people succeed. And so I would wish that you would give us some wings here to take advantage of what is already happening in this great state so that we can assist communities in growing their potential to wrap their arms around all of their young people.
Thank you, Dr. Benson. We do have a couple of questions here. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, a question for legal staff. Are we allowed to name even a nonprofit in law, such as Search Institute?
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, it's not something that we do all the time, but we have done it. Ordinarily, we describe the entity without specifically naming it. In this case, of course, the proposal is not codified, which doesn't mean it's not law, but it also means it's not going into the statute itself.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair, and for either Representative Lanning or the testifier, I would feel much more comfortable, I shouldn't say feel, I would be more comfortable if in line 25, when the Commissioner's Ed is providing for an evaluation of effectiveness, but there also is a report of results, and I think it would be good if the results were reported over a period of time, so once a community has involved itself with this program, that we know what the effect, what the difference in behavior is after 2 years, maybe 5 years, 10 years. Just some consideration for thought, Representative Manning, as you move forth. And then finally, Mr. Chair, is it okay if I ask
yes,
a third question? Thank you.
Please.
Representative Manning, didn't Moorhead do this on its own?
Representative Lanning.
The community leaders, when I was mayor, we came together with our school officials and other community leaders to do this. We used some state grant monies targeted for youth programs to support this, but they're essentially was done on our own. And you know, communities are going to have to raise their own resources to help do this effectively. But I believe, given the experience we've had, that the state of Minnesota has a lot at stake here, and we could really, I think, have some very positive results on student achievement and reducing at-risk behaviors by the state saying, this is important, we'd like to help communities do more of this kind of thing.
Erickson, perhaps we can clone Representative Lanning and have him be the mayor of several cities in our state. We might be well ahead of the game if we do that. Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't expecting to have Representative Kahn's cloning bill brought up in the Education Committee this morning. question for the Search Institute. I've long been a big fan of the work that you do and the different perspective you bring. As you said, rather than simply identifying challenges for kids, instead trying to build assets. I'm looking at the bill about putting forward an RFP and working with some existing programs. I'm also looking at the insights and evidence document that was provided, where you identified that a lot of the longitudinal work that you've done is pretty light on communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at Minnesota, that's increasingly diverse across the state. And I'm wondering, you identify on page 8 yourself that you need to look at larger samples of more diverse students or children in order to get some better research going. Can this bill be a tool to provide you with more experiences with more diverse learners and be able to build that sort of research base, particularly as you identify that it's both good risk reduction and good academic performance, both of which tend to be more challenging amongst communities of color?
That's a great question.
Dr. Benson.
Thank you. The cross-sectional research that includes really healthy, large samples of young people of color and of low-income youth across the United States is powerfully shows the relationship, the correlation of asset building to achievement for all kids. The issue of doing longitudinal research, of course, that is the Cadillac and extraordinarily expensive. But what would be awesome in Minnesota is, this is not a lot of money, so not a lot of it's going to be devoted to actually conducting longitudinal research, but what it will do is be catalytic for us. That is, hopefully it will draw into us, into this movement, young people from potentially tribal lives, immigrant youth moving to Minnesota, so that we will begin to capture wave one pictures of diverse young people in Minnesota that we could then leverage as we continue to do fund development with Minnesota and national foundations. Much of our work, the vast majority, is supported by foundations. Yes, I do think it can be catalytic, and we will design it that way so that it will help us be able to conduct that Cadillac of research over time.
Thank you.
Members, I'm very mindful of time. We have a couple of members who have questions or comments. I'm going to ask you to be very brief or pass if it's something that we can do after committee with the testifiers. Representative Haas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question for the testifiers and try to set my mind at ease because I keep thinking about, as a committee, what we did last year when we had testimony on the whiteboards. And we were very mindful of trying to craft legislation that would open up the ability for the product, that we wouldn't specifically define in legislation who we're giving a contract to. Can you help explain to me why we should specifically say the Search Institute receives this money and not open it up or request for a proposal?
Representative Lanning, very briefly, very quickly.
Well, I'm not aware of any competitors, so to speak, here, and we're talking about a nonprofit organization that has, through its own resources that it generated privately, was able to help my community and these other communities get started. But there's a limit to what you can expect them as a nonprofit to be able to extend this to a whole host of other communities. And all we're saying here is that there's some really good things happening here, and I think it's appropriate for the state to provide some support in that regard.
And I believe Representative Haas, that this touches on Representative Erickson's query, and I think that if the bill moves forward, I think there's some encouragement to look at perhaps a different way to structure that. There are ways in which that kind of language has been structured in a way where you're describing the kind of knowledge and skills. You can put it out to the marketplace, and maybe there is another Search Institute. Who knows? But maybe there isn't. So there are some, I think, ethical and flexible ways in which that can be structured, and perhaps Representative Lighting, you can keep an open mind as the building proceeds. Members, I'm going to call the question here because we do have two other bills we need to get to. And so Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 2185, as amended, be recommended to pass, referred to the Finance Committee with a further recommendation for the Early Childhood Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Benson.
Good to see you.
And good to see you, Representative Lenny. Next up is Representative Frolic, House File 2985. Representative Frolic, we have 15 minutes left in our allotted time. I am going to run a few minutes over, members, because we didn't have a quorum until we about 10 minutes into our committee meeting, and that clearly cuts into a very short time that we have to consider bills. But I would ask for, if you're able to move through quickly so we can get to Representative Gardner's bill yet today. Thank you. Representative Slawick, I think you want to move House File 2984, be recommended to pass, and this will be also referred to Finance Committee, and then with a recommendation it goes on to your committee, the Early Childhood Finance Committee. So that's the motion before us, members.
Representative Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is what we call a quick little bill, so hopefully it won't take a lot of time. It's rare that I get to bring forward a bill from my own school district, which is the North St. Paul Maplewood Oak Hill School District. So when visiting with our community ed director, I learned that there is a part of the law that we could look at changing. It's also where I get to bring forward a bill that I participate in. This is a school age program bill. The reason I'm always late, Mr. Chair and members, is because I'm dropping my daughter off at the school age care program, so I'm very familiar with this program personally. When you look at House File number 2984, it makes a change, which actually really is current practice in many of the school districts, that the school age program for children will be extended from June 1st of the year of kindergarten enrollment through August 31st of the year of grade 6 completion. As I said, many school districts are doing that now, but it would actually put this into law. This would allow programs to serve children, all children, and gives programs the ability to staff for children who need additional support to participate successfully, which specifically is aimed at kids that have special needs. Also, the current statute says that if it proves to be an undue financial burden, programs do not need to provide a service for a child, and this bill takes that equation out of it, allows programs to be served as reasonable, kids to be served at a reasonable, negligible cost. Compared to some of the K-12 special education costs. So with that, I'll ask Marie Larson from our district to talk a little bit about the bill.
Thank you. Good morning. Ms. Larson, please state your name for the record, and you've heard my appeal for brevity. So welcome this morning.
Thank you. Marie Larson, North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I will be brief.
Thank you.
I just wanted to follow up based on Representative Slowick's comments. The bill that we're looking to, the law that we're looking to modify, actually, we'd love to be able to expand that to eighth grade even. To serve our special needs population, it's very challenging. We do need to have special staff in some cases to help those students be able to mainstream into our school-age child care program. Right now we have our program, I'll speak locally, we do offer a program for the pre-K students to come in as they're going into kindergarten. It's a great opportunity for us to identify, in some cases, special needs for students, and we've been able to get some of those students special help right away going into the kindergarten level, and they're caught up probably by mid-year at least. We've run this program for a couple years, and it's been a very good success with that. We also extended our program to eighth grade in our district. Right now we're going to probably switch it to seventh grade based on the participation, but we're looking at the sixth grade students at the end of the school year, when they finish sixth grade, we can no longer levy for their special needs. So to blend them into the program, that is an additional cost to the overall program. And as you know, school-age child care programs are totally fee-based. So we're looking at the option of expanding that to the older grades as well so we can serve those students. And if you picture an 11-year-old student who's just finishing, quite often, especially the special needs, to have them stay home by themselves, it is a challenge for parents. So I'll just be as brief as that and try to get more information as you need it, but I do know you have a full slate today, so I want to keep it brief.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. I do appreciate it. I appreciate the work you do in your school district as
Thank
well.
You.
Members, are there any questions? If not, Representative Slawick renews her motion. I'm sorry, is anyone else in the audience? I haven't been doing this. Is anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? I apologize to the public for not doing that earlier. If not, Representative Slawick renews her motion to House File 2984 be recommended to pass and refer to Finance Committee with a recommendation for further referral to the Early Childhood Education Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Larson, for being with us here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Gardner, House File 2785. The Chair would move that House File 2785 be recommended to pass. And I believe, Representative Gardner, this is meant to go straight to the floor on general order.
Well, Mr. Chair, since I usually am dealing with things like energy and environment policy, I might heed council's suggestion. I don't know if it's something that GovOps wants to look at for a variety of reasons or local government, but I certainly would be fine with it going to the floor.
Grab it and go.
Yeah.
what I'm hearing from wise folks is if committees want it, they can always ask for it. In the meantime, I think we're all best served by moving our legislation forward.
Very good. Thank you.
So with that, our motion then is to refer it to the floor for passage. And you have a delete all amendment. The DE1, the chair would move the DE1 amendment. And this will basically, it's a delete all. It is a delete all, isn't it?
Mr.
Yeah,
Chair.
Delete everything amendments, so this will put it in the shape that you want it. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is before us if you prefer it to be. Representative Gardner, welcome
to our
committee.
Thank you. I'm wondering if House Research could let me know. I'm understanding there might be a one or two word oral amendment we might put on this. But I don't actually have the text in front of me.
Okay. Ms. Larson?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, I believe that the School Board Association is concerned about the requirement having to do with the majority of board members voting on the question. And there's some ambiguity in terms of who might vote, because in some circumstances there's more than one contract implicated, so potentially there could be more than one board member implicated in terms of being interested versus disinterested. And I believe that the School Board Association is going to recommend that on your delete everything amendment on page 1, line 11, after the word of, insert disinterested, so it's clear that it's the majority of disinterested school board members who would be voting on the question.
Representative Gardner, if you care to hear from the proponents of that, or is that
I think Ms. Larson hit the nail on the head there, so we're cool with that.
Ms. Schwab, welcome. Just a brief yes or no would be cool at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that's a definitive yes.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Schwab. So the, let's see, now how do I do this? I need to, was there another language issue as well? No? This is it.
I think we've got it down.
Okay. So, all right, so I would move, the chair moves that after the word of, on line 1.11 of the DE1 amendment, we add the word disinterested, and that'll do it. Is that correct, Ms. Larson? Very good. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Gardner. Why is it still before us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. They had an interesting situation in the Mountain View School District where I'm a resident and I have two kids in school. One of my constituents, in fact, was duly elected as a school board member, and as it turns out, her husband is not only a member of the custodial union for the district, but is the lead negotiator. And the council for the Mountain View School District went through the existing statutes related to conflict of interest in statute 471.88 and 87, and believe that not just recusing oneself from the vote on the labor contract or from negotiation on the contract would be sufficient for this board member to serve, and that there might be a situation where the other school board members would be liable for any actions related to any potential conflict of interest. We have a fairly large legislative delegation for the Mountain View School District, and I think it was the consensus that we did not necessarily agree with that interpretation, which in some cases was based on attorney general opinions from as late as 1969. However, in the interest of trying to clarify the existing statute to make sure that not only this school district can do its duty of educating kids and not getting bogged down in this issue, and also to alleviate concerns by other school districts as school boards around the state, as well as other city, county, and township officials, that we should clarify this language. And we have come up with the new subdivision that you see before you. And in the interest of brevity, I'll stop there and ask if there are any questions.
I think there's a lot of wisdom in your approach, and I'm not super well-versed with that section of law, but...
I was not either, Mr. Chair.
Right. But we will be, right?
3 weeks ago.
My quick read of it is, though, that I'm not quite sure why this became an issue, but any opportunity we have to clarify by law, we should always take advantage of and put the issue to bed. We're not breaking any... not making any precedent here. I think your change here really rests pretty solidly with legislative intent as that original section was written. Ms. Schwab, would you care to share your thoughts with us on this issue?
Mr. Chairman and members, I just want to start off by saying that Representative Gardner has been fantastic to work with. We were communicating on Sunday at least four or five times, and it was a pleasure to see someone who so diligently took on this. This is an important issue for my association. The clarity is very well needed. We see that as affecting individual district contracts as well as collective bargaining agreements, and really appreciate the committee's time in taking this on. We have local government officials who are trying to do the best they can, and this really clears the road.
I concur. Ms. Schwab, I'm sorry, I forgot to ask you to identify yourself and your affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great Schwab, and I represent the Minnesota School Board Association.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Schwab or Representative Gardner? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe for council, do other local government units have anything comparable to this? Would they, would they be interested now if this becomes a new provision?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I simply don't know. My guess would be that yes, that there might potentially be some similar conflict. The point here is that particularly in rural districts where you have very small communities, it's conceivable that this kind of circumstance would arise. It's also understandable that what constitutes an interested spouse is a complicated question, and I believe the intent here is to say that when there are no special benefits being accorded and these other circumstances apply, that concerns about interest are dissipated.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any other, Ms. Schwab?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we worked with the League of Minnesota Cities and the Township Association sort of as a group looking at this, and this really clarifies it for them, just having sections to do with our issues, so they appreciate it. That's why the League was here this morning.
Very good. Any other comments or questions? Anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on the bill? If not, then the chair renews his motion that House File 2785, as amended, be recommended to pass. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Gardner. Hopefully we didn't keep you waiting too long today.
I'm just fine. I'm glad Mount View can get back to work here. So thank
very
you.
Good. Members, thank you for your hard work today. We do have two meetings on Thursday at our regular scheduled meeting time, and then we'll have a joint hearing with the K-12 Finance Committee to look at the special ed report. Please let us know if I understand there may be conflicts with some of the members, so please let us know if you can't make the second hearing, and we'll provide an excuse absence on the record. Well, thank you. Until then, we are adjourned.